This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Let me tell you about a place somewhere up in New York way, where the people are so gay, twisting the night away. Twisting the night away, yeah, twisting, twisting. Everybody's feeling great. They're twisting, twisting, yeah, twisting the night away. Here's a man in evening clothes. How he got here, I don't know, but man, you ought to see him go twisting the night away. He's dancing with the chicken slacks. She's moving up and back. Oh man, there ain't nothing like twisting the night away.
There, oh yeah, remember Sam Cooke, the legendary? Started out as a church singer. Great voice. Good morning. Welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. I am Paul Molloy, and along with my buddy Big Ed Davis, we thank you for joining us. It is Friday, May the 20th. Yes, it is. In a few minutes, George Beebe of the Quincy Institute is going to be here. We are going to be talking about Russia and the nuclear threat that it poses right now with that war in Ukraine. How close are we? Are we on the brink? So stay tuned for that. And you just knew it was going to happen. A woman has now come forward and accused Elon Musk of sexual assault. What a coincidence. What a coincidence. The charge comes just as he's trying to take over Twitter, right? Well, we will get some thoughts on that, as well as a few other things, from the proprietor of the Barber Pole himself, Andrew Sorace, a little bit later in the show. And by the way, are Americans now learning the hard way about the corrosive nature of socialism? I mean, bit by bit, brick by brick, are we learning what socialism does to our country and our pocketbook and our way of life? We're going to talk about it, okay? And also, we got a great ultimate top 10. U.S. News and World Report comes out every year. Top 10 best places to live. So get ready. We're going to tell you where they are for the coming year. By the way, Freedom Works, we are sponsored in part by Andrew's Master Barbershop. Guys, I've been telling you, till I'm blue in the face, the best haircut that I have ever found in Tampa Bay is at Andrew's Master Barbershop. He is located in Dunedin in the Overcash Plaza on Overcash Drive, just north of State Road 580 Main Street. Call first for your appointment, 727-733-3773. And by the way, don't forget to listen to the Senior Voice of America radio show with Tim Bryce, Monday through Friday, 8 to 10 a.m., precedes our program, by the way, here on the Tantalk, if I could talk, Tantalk Radio Network. So, the stock market, where is it right now? I'm afraid to look.
31-something. I think it's actually up about a buck and a half.
So good.
It's up about a buck and a half, but it's at 31-something.
Good, because it fell yesterday as the benchmark inch closer to a bear market. We are getting to a bear market and a recession. It looks like we are, at least. Investors continue to dump equities on fears that the Fed, or to you that are not in the know, the Federal Reserve, is going to hike rates to fight the inflation. We got too many dollars chasing too few goods. That's always the way that inflation occurs. And so, you know, I can give you all kinds of statistics. The Dow dropped 237 points yesterday. It had dropped about, 1,200 points the day before. Mm-hmm. We got nothing but bad news on that front. Biden stands up there, and all he's doing is drooling out of his mouth. He doesn't know how to talk and respond to it. Even if you can't do anything, Joe, do you understand as president, you got to make people feel somewhat
Like you're hopeful. Working on the problem. Like you're working on the problem.
You're working on it. Make them feel somewhat optimistic that we're going to, that brighter days are ahead. That was the one thing about people like Ronald Reagan, for those that remember him. The guy always had a perpetual optimistic look on America, mm-hmm. you know. But not Biden. He's down somewhere, and I don't know where he is, actually.
We just get denial and excuses.
Exactly.
It's either Trump's fault, Putin's fault, or it's just not happening.
Exactly. I mean, we got everything going wrong right now. I'm afraid to talk about it, but everything's going wrong. The border's going wrong. Inflation's going wrong. Gas prices are going wrong. We can't find any baby formula. I can't find any cat food.
You know, the baby formula, you bring that up. You know, Fox had a restaurant owner in Texas that, through his distributor, managed to get a hold of 50 cases of baby formula and was giving it away free. Didn't have to buy anything in his restaurant, giving it away free if you needed it free.
Wow.
Now, Fox aired that story. I thought it was great, but I think they missed the story. The real story, if this man, who just, Joe Blow owns his own restaurant, found 50 cases, why can't somebody in our government find enough to feed these kids?
I know.
From somewhere. I mean, how about that vice president who's doing nothing? Who doesn't go near the border, she's got nothing to do. Appoint somebody to feed the kids.
First of all, she's the border czar. She could drive a truck down to the border and stock up.
She can't spell border czar.
And stock up on all the baby formula we apparently have over on skids and pallets and whatever else down there. It just looks so bad. It really does. It looks so bad. And people are just, I think there is no trust or faith or confidence at all in Biden. In fact, we've got a new poll, not that it makes anybody going to be surprised on it, but he has now sunk to his lowest level. And this is the AP, by the way. They are a far left, well, I should say they're left-leaning media. They've been that way for a long time. President Biden's approval rating dipped to its lowest point of his presidency in May, according to this AP poll. 39% of adults approve of his performance, according to the poll. Overall, 80% say the U.S. is headed in the wrong direction. Approximately 80%. 2 in 10 adults say it's headed in the right direction. 2 in 10 adults say the economy is good. That's 8 out of 10 that say it ain't good. And that is down from 3 in 10 last month. Those drops were concentrated among Democrats. Democrats are turning on them. Did you know that, I believe if I can find it, 69% of Hispanics, or 65% of Hispanics, disapprove of Biden's of what he is doing. Here it is. Biden's Hispanic approval rating has plummeted to 26%. I said 65. That means 74% of Hispanics disapprove of what he is doing. 74% of Hispanics. If he's lost the Hispanic vote and he's got the door open down on the southern border, obviously that's not impressing anybody in the Hispanic American community.
You know what? I say, what the heck? Let's not wait 2.5 years. Let's vote now.
We should before it's too late to vote at all.
I mean, the border is ridiculous, and it's sad to say, with so much going on, it's actually on the back burner.
Yeah,
you know, as bad as it is, it's just not we front news
things.
Right now.
We got other things
you
to
know,
worry about.
Which the Biden administration loves that.
Hey, concentrate on something else like baby formula or, let's see, war in Afghanistan. Yeah. How about the gas prices?
Putin,
but don't look down at the
Putin,
border.
Make some noise, Putin. You know, come on.
Yeah. Anyway, speaking of Putin, we are going to take our break, and George Beebe is going to join us from the Quincy Institute. We're going to talk about Putin, we're going to talk about Russia, and we're going to talk about the nuclear threat.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Our Freedom Works radio show has been proud these many years to be sponsored by what I think is the best men's barbershop in Tampa Bay, Andrew's Master Barbershop in Dunedin. You'll get exactly the cut you desire and get it at the best price in Pinellas County. The staff is expert in quality haircuts, and the shop is always clean, sparkling, and attractive. And Andrew's Master Barbershop is easy to get to, just north of State Road 580 Main Street on Overcash Drive in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. They're open Tuesdays through Saturdays, so men, call for your appointment, 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773. Andrew's Master Barbershop.
Caregivers find the support they need on Connecting Caregivers Radio with Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregiver. Heard every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m., Linda and her caring and knowledgeable guests will bring you education, information, and resources, as well as a shoulder for caregivers. That's Connecting Caregivers Radio with Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregiver, where you can find help and hope every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m. right here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
I gave a girl. Hey, we are back on a Friday, and we thank you so very much for being with us. A little rainy here in Tampa Bay, although we need it badly. So Finland and Sweden are applying for membership to NATO. And guess who is standing in the way of this? Turkey. Turkey, which can deliver, I guess, a fatal vote, because all of the NATO countries apparently have to vote yes. Turkey is saying, not so fast. Now, some observers think Russian influence with Turkey could be one of the major factors. No kidding. Of course it is. And that's what's going on right now. But this brings us to the whole, I guess, the whole, a larger question of the stability of things with Russia during this Ukraine war, and the nuclear threat. So we've got George Beebe. He is Director of Grand Strategy at the Quincy Institute. He wrote a book, by the way, a few years ago, The Russia Trap, How Our Shadow War with Russia Could Spiral into Nuclear Catastrophe. George, welcome to Freedom Works.
Thank you.
This is such an important and kind of a scary thing to talk about. The idea that we could get into a nuclear conflagration because of the things that are going on in Ukraine. So let me ask you directly, do you think we're getting closer to a nuclear war with Russia right now?
Well, yes, I think we are getting closer, quite uncomfortably close. Now, that doesn't mean that it's likely, but I think the reality of the situation is that the Russians feel that this is a war with existential consequences for Russia. They think that Russia's continued existence as a state is at stake. And when a country feels that way, and it has the largest nuclear arsenal in the world, as Russia does, you're playing with fire. So we need to be very, very careful about the situation that we're dealing with.
Yeah. Now, Putin himself is the guy that can push the button on this, right? I mean, there's nobody else right now that would do that. Let me ask you, do you think right now that Putin, Vladimir Putin, president of Russia, is in complete control of what's going on in Russia? Or is there any kind of pushback from people around him right now, and it's kind of throttling him a little bit?
Well, I don't think that Putin's leadership is threatened right now. Yes, I do think he is in control. That doesn't mean he faces no opposition whatsoever. Yes, he does. The opposition that the United States likes to focus on comes from his political left, people who are essentially Western-oriented that want to see Russia governed in a more liberal, democratic fashion. There are very, very few of those. And I think what has happened since the war broke out is that many of those people have chosen to leave Russia or are looking to leave Russia. The more significant opposition he faces comes from his political right. People who are hardcore Russian nationalists who think that he has been too soft on the West, not ambitious enough in the way he's dealing with Ukraine, and not willing to use all of the firepower that Russia has to achieve its objectives there. That's a much bigger group. And they've been pushing Putin in a more bellicose direction for several years now. So, yes, he faces opposition. No, I don't think his leadership is under threat right now. But the opposition that we tend to look at is not really what's threatening him there.
Wow. That's very scary now that I think about that. We're talking with George Beebe, Director of Grand Strategy at the Quincy Institute. He spent more than 20 years in government as an intelligence analyst, a diplomat, and a policy advisor, including director of the CIA's Russia Analysis and a staff advisor on Russia Matters to Vice President Dick Cheney. George, you know, it seems like things are turning a little bit towards, may I say, Ukraine, and Russia's battle has kind of stalled. They haven't been able to capture Kyiv as quickly as they wanted to, if at all. Perhaps they didn't. Perhaps they thought that, you know, they'd wander into Ukraine and the Ukrainians would throw up their hands. It has not happened. Does the fighting back by Ukraine as intensely as it's done, is this also raising the specter of a possible nuclear threat? I mean, making it more likely or whatever? You know what I mean?
Well, I think the answer to that is complicated. So you're absolutely right. The Russians did not expect to face the kind of effective and resolute Ukrainian military resistance that they have. The reports are that when Russia first sent its invasion force into Kyiv, many of them were equipped with riot gear, which tells you that they didn't expect to have to be fighting house to house in urban warfare. They expected that their chief challenge was going to be controlling the local population after Russia was in charge there. And that obviously was a major mistake, and it set the Russian military back on its heels, and it has not really been able to recover sufficiently since that time. The Russians seem to be making incremental progress in the Donbass. They've scaled back their military ambitions. I think they have abandoned the hope that they will take Kyiv and rule Ukraine, and are now looking at much more limited objectives in Ukraine's east, hoping to take over territory that has been largely Russian-speaking over the past many decades. But even that is proven to be a challenge, and I think it's fair to describe the situation there as a stalemate right now.
Wow.
Now, does that increase the likelihood of escalation? It really depends on whether Ukraine and the West raise their own objectives here. Our initial objectives were essentially to play defense, to stymie the Russian offensive, make sure they couldn't achieve their objectives. That essentially has been accomplished. But now the question that we face really is, do we go beyond that and think about driving Russian forces out of all of Ukrainian territory? Are we intent on some sort of unconditional victory in which the Russian military is defeated and weakened and Putin is humiliated?
Yeah.
That's the kind of scenario in which the Russians could retaliate and lash back because they could feel cornered. That's not a decision that I think is in our interest to present them with.
Do you think the U.S. and the Biden administration has been handling the Ukraine war correctly so far from our vantage point?
Well, I would give them mixed reviews on this. They've done a very good job of
I think we lost him. We'll try and get him back. That happens.
With the wherewithal it needs to defend itself. And I think it's fair to say that the Biden team has done an exemplary job in those areas. Where I would give them poorer reviews is in how do you bring this war to an early negotiated settlement? Because I think the likelihood that either Ukraine or Russia wins this outright is low. And the price of pushing for that could be catastrophically bad. For one thing, Ukraine itself will be left in ruins the longer this war goes on. The prospect of reestablishing some sort of stable security architecture in Europe goes away, but also the chances that the Russians will retaliate against the West, against the United States directly, and that we could wind up in a direct military conflict with Russia go up significantly. And I think Biden is aware that World War III is not something that we should be walking into. But I don't think he's done enough diplomatically to try to encourage a settlement. We have a lot of leverage to bring to bear on that. And right now, I don't think we're using it.
We're talking with George Beebe, Director of Grand Strategy at the Quincy Institute. Among other things, he has a book called The Russia Trap, How Our Shadow War with Russia Could Spiral into Nuclear Catastrophe. $40 billion package of more aid to Ukraine. Don't know if it's going to get through that way. Doesn't look like it will in that amount. Is that a good thing? Bad thing? Mixed feelings? What do you think?
Well, I think the answer to that is it depends. Budgets, of course, are reflections of any government's priorities. You don't have infinite resources. You have to decide what's most important, what's less important. Right now, it looks like, if you add up the numbers, the Biden administration thinks that providing military support to Ukraine is one of, if not the most important things that the United States needs to do. I'm not sure a lot of Americans would agree with that, but that's really a matter for them to decide. I would say that the kind of military and intelligence support we're providing to the Ukrainians should be tied to some sort of path toward an achievable objective here. It can't simply be, you know, we want to bleed the Russians dry over the course of many years of war. That's an extremely dangerous objective for us to have under these circumstances. And I don't think it can realistically be driving the Russian military out of Ukraine, because before that happens, I think the Russians will escalate. Mm-hmm. They have the ability to make sure that everybody else loses if we insist that Russia must lose. And that becomes a lose-lose scenario, and we're one of the losers in that. So I think as we consider providing aid, we have to have an achievable objective in mind. And I have not heard that articulated with this $40 billion.
Yeah. That's a good point. You know, I'm thinking, would we end up with some sort of a truce? You know, like the Korean War never ended, really, technically. There might not be a victor or even a loser in this, and we'd have some sort of a truce. But I don't know how that would be affected. I wouldn't think the Ukrainians would listen to any Russians that would be sitting in government, you know, in any part of the country. It becomes kind of complicated. I do want to ask you one thing here. George, that you'd have to look into your crystal ball or something. Do you think if Donald Trump had been reelected president, that Putin would have invaded the Ukraine?
Well, that is a very difficult question to answer, because it the circumstances in which Trump would be governing would matter a lot. And you know, as we learn more and more over time, it was quite clear that the issue of Russia and Trump's relationship to Russia was being used instrumentally to prevent him from having any kind of coherent or effective policy toward Russia. It was designed to tie his hands, and it did so. And so the question of, you know, would Russia have invaded where Trump president, you know, is very much affected by the question of, you know, how effectively could Trump govern if he were president?
Well, I get the impression,
deal with Russia, and I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, of course. I get the impression that because, I mean, you know, during the 4 years that Trump was president, he didn't invade.
I mean, Putin took Crimea during, well, 2014, was it, under Obama, and then nothing with Trump. And then after Trump leaves, almost immediately he starts threatening the border of Ukraine with Biden. Yeah. I'm thinking that it's maybe more than a coincidence.
Well, it might be. You know, we've been in an escalatory spiral with the Russians for almost 20 years. This invasion didn't come out of nowhere. It was really the culmination of this dynamic. And many people believe that the way you deal with that kind of situation is through strength. You know, you deter the Russians. You show them that you're going to fight back hard. But that doesn't work with escalatory spirals. It doesn't work with countries that believe that they are, over time, being cornered, and that if they don't do anything to fight back, then ultimately they'll be squashed. To deal with an escalatory spiral, you have to engage in diplomacy. And our country has not been willing to do that with the Russians. We've thought, essentially, you know, the harder we hammer them, the more we threaten them with bad outcomes, the more likely they're going to be to stand down. But that's not how this works. You know, when you threaten, you know, a cornered animal, they don't say, okay, we give. They tend to fight back.
Yeah, exactly.
The alternative is that they're going to die. Yeah. You know, so could Trump have pulled off that kind of diplomacy? It's hard to know. It's hard to know. I will say that he seemed inclined to try to find that way out, and I haven't heard that from other leaders. Particularly recently.
It's been a real pleasure talking with you, George. I want to thank you so much. I'd look forward to talking with you again soon.
Great. Well, thank you very much.
All right. It's been our pleasure. George Beebe, Quincy Institute. Very interesting. All right. And important. We're going to take our break. When we come back, you know, you just knew it's going to happen. Elon Musk trying to get Twitter. All of a sudden, out of the blue, sexual assault charge. We're going to get some thoughts on it, as well as a few other things from the master barber himself, Andrew Ceraci.
Maybe you want to give me kisses sweet.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Our FreedomWorks radio show has been proud these many years to be sponsored by what I think is the best men's barbershop in Tampa Bay, Andrew's Master Barbershop in Dunedin. You'll get exactly the cut you desire and get it at the best price in Pinellas County. The staff is expert in quality haircuts, and the shop is always clean, sparkling, and attractive. And Andrew's Master Barbershop is easy to get to, just north of State Road 580 Main Street on Overcash Drive in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. They're open Tuesdays through Saturdays, so men, call for your appointment, 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773. Andrew's Master Barbershop.
Hey, Tantalk listeners, get your calendars out because Senior Voice America is going to an every morning format from 8 to 10 a.m. Monday through Friday. Your hosts Tim Bryce and Berkeley Badger shall have even more time to discuss politics, religion, finance, and health. So set your dials, you early bird seniors, and join the call-in party every morning, 8 to 10 a.m. on your Tantalk Radio Network. SVA, improving your day.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back on a Friday. A little overcast. Has been raining this morning, too, here in Tampa Bay. Well, Elon Musk, SpaceX CEO, going after Twitter. I think he's, they claim he's, the richest man in the world now. He's denying a sexual assault claim. And this comes from 2018 from a former flight attendant in his SpaceX program. She worked in the cabin crew, and she accused him of exposing himself, rubbing her leg, offering to buy her a horse. A horse?
in exchange for a massage. That's a pretty good deal. You got a horse?
That'll get you a date every time.
I'll tell you what.
You know,
what kind of horse would you like? Give me a quick massage.
Almost this time yesterday, the day before, when he said that he wasn't going to vote Democrat anymore, he actually said, now watch for the attacks to come and the allegations and stuff and the slander and all. Here you go.
There you go, exactly. Are we surprised? No, we are not surprised. Now, having said that, I have read this report, and to be honest with you, I think there was something going on there. They ended up giving her a $250,000 severance agreement package in 2018. That's a pretty good amount of money. You give a flight attendant, okay? Okay, you got to leave. Here's $250,000. There are some people that will vouch that they witnessed some of the things that were going on, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, we got the proprietor of the barber pole. Andrew, have you heard about the story here on Elon Musk and this flight attendant? And B, do you believe it?
Oh, Paul, you know, I read the whole thing about it early this morning, and I was chuckling through the whole thing. And I was saying to myself, for $250,000, he could have hit me.
Yes.
What are you talking about?
I know. $250,000, we'll figure something out.
That's right. I mean, you know, we all knew this was going to happen. And, you know, this all stems back, I don't know how many years ago, maybe with the women's movement, every time they turned around, a man is groping me. We let them get away with this, Paul.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, because you know why? Because we never condemned anybody when we found out it was false. We haven't thrown any of them in jail.
Yeah.
Lying. And we should have, because you know what? This wouldn't be going on.
Yeah. I think, I mean, the timing is very suspect, is it not? Here he is trying to take over Twitter. And then Ed talked about, he declares that he used to be a Democrat, and maybe he won't be a Democrat anymore. You know, he said some said some uncomplimentary things, I guess, about Biden's performance.
Well, isn't it funny how the story didn't come out the whole time he was a Democrat?
Exactly. It didn't come out until this moment.
Yeah.
And it happened 4 years ago. So, obviously, one sees a little money in this, right?
Well, maybe she wants another 250 grand to stop the story. Who knows?
I think you may be right. She wants something.
You know, Paul, when it comes to women shooting their mouth off about men grabbing them and groping them, you know how much of that I believe, Paul?
I would say close to zero.
That's right. Like I said, we let them get away with it, and this is what happens. It's always the man, the man, the man.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I'm just calling myself the... what is that word? I'm the one that is... It has been condemned more than any other human being in the world today. I'm a white male. So
it's tough, isn't it?
Blamed for everything. It's the worst thing in the world to be. Man, I'm down at the totem pole.
Being a white male has, they've been stomping down on them.
We're the worst. We're the ones that destroyed this country. We're the ones that grope all the women. We're the ones that do all the mass shootings. You know, it's terrible being a white male today, and this is what it all boils down to.
Do you think that Elon Musk is going to really suffer from this one? I mean, if you think about it.
Oh, the people love the guy.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think it's
You know what they're afraid of, Paul?
What?
They're afraid because Elon Musk said he'll never vote Democrat again. There's so many people that like this guy and listen to him, they got to try to get rid of him.
I think they're more afraid that he's really going to open up Twitter and you're going to be able to see a balanced approach with people being allowed, like Trump and like anybody else, to express their views without fear of being shut down again.
Just look at Paul, what was going on with Twitter, okay? He's having this thing all evaluated, and 3/4 of the people that they say are on there aren't even there.
That's right, they left. Yeah.
Okay, it's a bunch of bots, whatever a bot is, I got no idea.
Yeah, I guess it's supposed to be short for robot of some sort, but and then they got the algorithm thing. He was going to publish the algorithm thing and show how they were skewing it so that conservatives were being shut down as opposed to liberals.
That's right.
Yeah.
So they're afraid of all this. Let's get the women after them, but they better realize that they get the women going after the wrong party. They got one woman going after Elon Musk,
They got 50 million women going after Joe Biden now.
Yeah, with the baby formula.
That's right.
And we were just reading, did you hear that 76%, I think it was, of Hispanics disapprove of Biden's performance?
He's got
like 26% approval in the Hispanic community. This is the guy that's opened the door on the southern border. And expected that he would somehow, gain friends and influence people in the Hispanic community. It hadn't worked.
Yep. Paul, they're falling apart. And now I was reading another article this morning about the Sussman trial.
Oh, yeah. And Michael Sussman.
They're saying how many FBI agents and everything are starting to roll on everything that happened with this Durham trial coming up.
Yeah, you know, this Michael Sussman is directly linked to Hillary Clinton. Directly linked. He was working for her. He was being paid by her. And then he's trying to claim that somehow he takes off his Hillary Clinton attorney hat, and he goes over and he finds out these horrible things that are going on between Trump and Russia, and he just has to go to the FBI and he tells them, look, this has nothing to do with my connection to Hillary Clinton and the Democrats. I'm trying to be a patriotic American in reporting this.
Thank God we're not all patriots like him, huh?
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, it's ridiculous. But you know what? And this is, I think you and I chatted about this. This is probably a Democratic judge.
There's no question of it is a Democratic judge.
So you wonder where it will eventually go. But so far, he says, oh, yeah, the trial is going to proceed. Sussman's attorney is trying like crazy to shut this thing down and not have it proceed, but it sounds like it's on its way. So my other question is, well, okay, is it a jury trial? And how much of an influence? I always think of the jury in the O.J. Simpson trial, right?
You know, it's like they said, the judge is allowing jurors who contributed to the Clinton campaign and people that contributed to the AOC campaign.
Really?
And the juries.
Yeah. Oh, that's not right.
No, the whole trial isn't going to be right.
I mean, if that was the case, they got a case on appeal, if indeed, you know what I mean?
Right, I agree.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're in Washington, D.C., in a Democrat community, a Democrat judge, and it could be a Democrat jury.
Yeah. Exactly right.
It's going to happen.
Why can't that be brought up before the trial even starts and save us some time? Say the prosecuting attorney say, listen, juror so and so is this,
and they're supposed
and
to be
stop
able,
it.
They're supposed to be able to. They have X number of challenges on a jury. You know, each attorney, wouldn't they challenge every one of them that had any?
But if I had a brother and he was accused of something and I'm on the jury, that's not a challenge. That's stupidity.
Yeah, exactly. That's a bias. Anyway, it's very interesting. I did want to add. I wanted to ask you, Andrew, the master barber, about what's going on with Governor DeSantis. You know, he's been getting some slings and arrows, obviously, from the media, no matter what he does. But he's coming out smelling like a rose, and he's going to be up for reelection in 2 years.
In this year.
What am I saying in 2 years? I'm thinking of the presidential election. In this year, in November, exactly. I don't think there's any chance that Charlie Crist gets anywhere close to DeSantis. What do you think?
It's not even going to be. It won't even be an election. The only problem is they might have trouble counting the votes over here, just like they're having in Pennsylvania right now with...
Yeah, what's going on over there? Why are they taking so long?
Their printer broke.
The printer.
My printer broke.
I've been printing all of these ballots.
I mean, think about it. How can you have a primary election and the votes not be counted yet?
Ridiculous. You know, one thing in Florida, we count as the votes come in the mail. They actually count so that we can get this thing over with quickly. You know, they don't do it in Pennsylvania. They wait until they're all in, right?
I have no idea.
They wait until they're all in.
Yeah.
Florida, they will not start counting
Florida,
until...
Florida counts the mail-ins before the election even starts, before the day of the election.
So they
know going in.
Yeah, we've kind of got our act together on that one a little better. But yes, you're right. It's very questionable about... First of all, I never buy anything that comes out of the Philadelphia precincts. I remember, again, I think I've said this a few times, when Romney was running against Obama, they had a tally of the precincts in Philadelphia. It was like one precinct or a couple, it showed 100-something thousand Obama, zero.
Mm.
For Romney. How can that be? There had to be, even by mistake, he had to get at least a few votes. It was just so, I mean.
Wishful thinking.
I mean, come on. I mean, you talk about what's going on in the inner city voting precincts.
Again, I think they ought to go old school and use paper ballots.
I agree.
Like France. France doesn't have any problems with their elections, do they?
I think we go back to standing in line and waiting and getting in there in a booth and handing it to a box or putting it in a box. And away you go.
And look at what happened in the Philippines. The same thing that happened here. Was it last week or the week before they had their elections? And the guy that had thousands and thousands of people at his rallies lost to a guy that was like Biden, didn't go anywhere.
Really?
But you know what the best part about it was?
What's
they
that?
Used Dominion voting machines.
Mm. Oh, they did.
Yes,
oh,
they did. The same ones we used. So what does that tell you?
Yeah.
Isn't it funny, though, another thing, too, with part of the Twitter thing that you heard all these people that voted for Joe Biden during the election, and now we find out that his Twitter account, half of it was false.
That's right.
Joe Biden's Twitter account?
It was all bots.
Right.
Really?
And a bot, the bot is something
that
people program to Joe Smith. And then they pre-program what they want to say in there. It's not a real person.
Right.
They come up with 100 names, and then they send the tweet out.
Yeah.
I love Joe Biden, and they send that out.
Well, you know, it's fraudulent.
Well, that's what it is. Exactly. Yeah. That's why he wants the price lowered.
Wow.
You know? It's like I said earlier. It's like you want to buy a radio station that says that they can reach 5 million people when their signal's strong enough to only reach 2,000.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. Well, my friend, thank you as always for being with us. My God, what a mess! But we'll
straighten it out in a couple days.
We'll figure it out. All right, I'll talk to you on Monday, Andrew.
Have a good day, buddy.
All right, thanks so much, Master Barber himself. All right, we're going to take our final break. When we come back, are Americans finally learning kind of the hard way about the corrosive, insidious, destructive nature of socialism? We're going to talk about it.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Our Freedom Works radio show has been proud these many years to be sponsored by what I think is the best men's barbershop in Tampa Bay, Andrew's Master Barbershop in Dunedin. You'll get exactly the cut you desire and get it at the best price in Pinellas County. The staff is expert in quality haircuts, and the shop is always clean, sparkling, and attractive. And Andrew's Master Barbershop is easy to get to, just north of State Road 580 Main Street on Overcash Drive in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. They're open Tuesdays through Saturdays, so men, call for your appointment, 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773. Andrew's Master Barbershop.
Hey, did you know there's a live psychology talk show Thursday and Friday at noon where you can call in and get free guidance and also learn several different topics relating to ending the stigma on mental health? It's called Moments of Clarity on WTAN 1340 AM. It's with licensed therapist Tiffany Warner, who will try to end the stigma on mental health. But the only way you can do that is to listen to Moments of Clarity Thursday and Friday at noon on WTAN 1340 AM, the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Thank you so very much for being with us here on Freedom Works. I am Paul Molloy, and we are here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time on our great Tan Talk Radio Network. But if you cannot listen to us at 10 to 11 every time, thank God for Big Ed. He puts all our shows on podcast. All you got to do is go to our website, OurFreedomWorks.com, O-U-R, OurFreedomWorks.com, and click on the podcast button, and away you go. Follow the bouncing ball. All right. So Now even Democrats, if you look at the latest polls, and obviously Hispanics, about 74% of them, are turning on Joe Biden and the liberals. And I'm thinking about all of these things that the government has been trying to do, I would say to us rather than for us. But, you know, all the money that they were handing out during the pandemic, all the money that they want to hand out and they want to continue to hand out all over the place. Because that's really, when you're a socialist, you know, what you're trying to do is you're trying to get everybody to kind of march to your tune, if you think about it. Go all the way back to when we really started seeing the wall of free market start to crack a little bit. That would be 1935 under President Franklin Roosevelt, when he introduced what at the time sounded great, Social Security. In 1935 it started. And they would take a small amount of money out of your paycheck, you know, and it was going to help you after you retired. But you still had to be providing for yourself. Up until then, everybody provided for themselves, right? Well, there was all of these Democrats, these poorer people, that weren't doing as well as the others. And, of course, when you start throwing money at people, Roosevelt discovered they'll vote for you again. He was in his fourth term when he died, okay? So it worked. And 30 years later, in 1965, Lyndon Johnson handed out all kinds of goodies in the Medicare package, right? The Great Society package. And away we went. We took some of the major things of the free market and we socialized them. Our retirement benefits and our health care. Our health care was doing great before 1965. We were number one in the world. Everybody was coming to the United States. And you could afford your doctor. And you could choose your doctor. And your doctor knew you. And you didn't pay an arm and a leg to see him. And yet we had the best doctors in the world. We had the best in the world. But we decided we were going to start having the federal government run things. They'll do a better job. And then we got Obamacare. Now nobody can afford health care. Go into the hospital now, get surgery, see how much it'll cost. You can't afford it. I think we're learning the hard way. I really do.
All you have to do is look up socialism real quick. Let me two quick points.
Sure, please.
Citizens of social societies depend on the government for everything, including food. Well, we've got a shortage of food right now, don't we? We've got food that's out of priced. Housing. Look at the housing market right now. We can't afford to go buy a house. Education. They want to rule. They want to know. They want to teach our kids what they want to teach.
And we've dumbed down our kids. Right?
And health care, as you brought up. And health care. Now, if you can't get the food, you can't get the housing, that leads to what? That leads to welfare. Now you're dependent on the government. Another thing is social
system.
Makes
you more dependent.
All decisions regarding production, distribution, and pricing are made by the government.
Yeah.
And that's slowly, but you're just like a war. You want to invade a country kind of like what's going on in Ukraine. You don't go from one point. You go from here. You go to this angle, and you surround it. And that's what they're doing now. They're doing everything from dividing the country to shortage of food, shortage of gas, outpricing of gas, outpricing of housing.
Yeah. Exactly. It's a very, very scary scenario. I'm hoping that we are waking up to it. All right. Before we get to our top 10, we have a good one. I was pleased to see, with about 4 seconds left, the Tampa Bay Lightning won a game again. They're 2-0 against Florida. What's going on?
At 10 seconds left, and the game was tied in the third.
Can you believe it?
I got up to get my overtime snack ready.
Yeah, right. I know what you mean.
And all I heard was goal, you know, or score.
Can you imagine how Florida must have felt, the Florida Panthers?
Wah,
yeah,
wah.
They had to be sick. So they're down 2-0, and back they come to this Sunday. We got two games going on here in Tampa Bay.
Yes, we do. Let up, though.
No, we can't. All right, time for our top 10, Ed. I think it's pretty good. This is the U.S. News and World Report's
top 10 best places to live in 2022 and 2023. To make the list, a place had to have good value, be a desirable place to live in terms of the community, have a strong job market, and a high quality of life. Okay, here we go. Number 10. I can't believe this. San Francisco.
Really?
Now, it's so expensive, and we got all the homeless and all of the nonsense politics. But according to the U.S. News and World Report, get over to San Francisco.
Not Nancy Pelosi's district.
I don't think so. Okay, number 9. This one makes more sense. Sarasota, Florida. Sarasota is a good place to live. It's been that way for a while, and it's a great, you know, great climate and the whole bit. Number 8. Portland, Maine. Now, it's very pretty up there. In right there on the Atlantic Ocean. Lots of fish. You ever been there?
Lots of Antifa, too.
Are there in Portland, Maine?
Oh, Portland, Maine. I thought you were Portland, Maine. Oh, never mind.
No, not Oregon. Okay. No, the other Portland.
Yeah, Maine.
Okay. Number 7. Fayetteville, Arkansas. Fayetteville, Arkansas. It's a good place to live. You better like country music.
Mm.
Number 6. Raleigh, Durham, North Carolina. Well, we know that. Yeah. You know, big tech area, lots of people moving there.
Lots of land.
What's that?
Lots of land. Mountains.
Yeah, mountainy area. Right you are. Number 5. This is an expensive place, but San Jose, California. It's a techie place, obviously. You've got, you're not far from San Francisco, but I'd rather live in San Jose than San Francisco, I guess, if I had my choice. Number 4. Oh, this is a place you go by sometimes at Boulder, Colorado.
Bit expensive.
It is expensive, actually. The value is very, it's not as good as other places. So, in other words, you do spend more money.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This next one really surprises me. Number 3. Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Well, if you like the cold and like a lot of snow.
It's cold and snowy. There is a lot to do because I'll tell you one thing. When you get north, they do find activities of all kinds. Maybe it's to keep warm. But Green Bay, Wisconsin, you get a good bang for your buck there, I'll tell
you. How much can you snowmobile?
Yeah, after a while you get a little tired of that, don't you? Number 2. Colorado Springs, Colorado.
Beautiful place.
It's got to be beautiful.
Beautiful, absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, but you better bring your wallet.
Mm. You know they're going to have a snowstorm this weekend.
In Colorado Springs? Wow. A little late.
Around Denver area, actually.
Is that right?
Snowstorm. Not a sprinkling of snow.
No, a biggie?
Yeah.
That's a shock. Do they have them frequently in late May?
May, yeah. Yeah.
And they do. Okay. All right, Ed. I know you'd have no idea. I'd have no idea. Do you want to try and harbor a guess at number 1 best place to live?
Hawaii? I don't know. It's too expensive.
Well, it starts with an H.
All right.
Huntsville, Alabama. What do you mean?
Somebody came up to me and said, you want an all-expense-paid trip to Huntsville, Alabama. I'd be like, no, I'm good. Never mind. I'm good.
I've never been there. They get an overall quality of life score of 7 out of 10.
It just sounds hot and sweaty there. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a big tech industry place, too, I guess.
And you for that.
All right. Thank you so very much for being with us. I hope you have a wonderful weekend. We'll be back on Monday. And remember, freedom works.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM 104.3
Listen.
This is